Okay, I hope everything is going well. It's Tyler Bryden. I am stream of consciousness doing this, but I've thought about it a lot, so I'm hoping that that it actually works. And really, the thing that I want to talk about today is how I'm using speak to improve my mental health. And hopefully by going through this, it might illuminate options for anyone who watches this or listens to this or reads it. Probably going to give myself some ideas, sort of exploring this as I go with a couple core themes, concepts, and then just the previous work that I've done in the past. But I'm continuing to chart into new territory, continuing to learn things every day. And as you get deeper and deeper down a rabbit hole, just sort of see more and more. And I thought this with marketing at the time when I started sort of my journey of trying to figure out marketing. It was like, I'm going to figure this all out in a year. And then you look at it and it's like a little puddle, but that puddle then turns into a lake. That lake then turns into a big ocean, and it gets deeper and deeper. And the more you go down one thing, the more intricate it gets, the more you realize there's so much to actually learn. I guess a couple housekeeping items. I am running this on a laptop. It's making a little bit of noise, so I apologize if this isn't perfect audio quality. I'm going to continue to work and figure this out. And again, this is a little bit of stream of consciousness. There are some, again, some core concepts that I'm looking at, but there's a lot of things new that I'm exploring here and then sharing and walking through for the first time while being recorded with a laptop that is, somewhat decent, but also causing me problems. I hope I've got a decent setup here. And again, the question that I'm asking myself right now, what I'm trying to work through, is how do I use speak to improve my mental health? And anyone who knows me knows how much I really do care about this. I first realized I was struggling with depression when I was in university, and a lot of my friends were moving out. They were living in the dorms in university and meeting all these friends and feeling connected. And in my case, I had been drafted to the OHL. I had tried out. They wanted me to play exhibitions, but something didn't feel right. I wanted to come home. And it was during this time where my parents were splitting up. My mom was living alone for the first time in, I mean, forever. And it was a really difficult time to be so far away. And I mean, I wasn't that good of a hockey player, but I think there was some self-sabotage that also came along with that, and ended up with me living at home in a small city just outside London, Ontario. And and as I watched all this stuff happen, all my friends have so much fun, and I, only went part-time to university, didn't get too involved, played hockey, and continued to get sort of lost in that culture. I really started to feel the first underpinnings, I guess, of depression. And I remember walking up to my mom one day and just saying, "Mom, like, I'm sad. It's not just sad anymore. This is continuing. This is depression. I feel depressed." And that was the first time I had ever, turned that feeling into words, understood. I had written lyrics for music, and I loved sad hip hop that was powerful and impactful, and I would write my own lyrics, and a lot of my own lyrics were dark. And I guess I should have seen all these things, but I didn't realize, and I still didn't even realize at that moment, how sad I actually was. And for myself, I think there's lots of genetic things, lots of reasons why you can be sad. For my, a big one for myself was just my dad struggling with alcoholism. And anyone who has had a father, parent, someone close to them struggle with alcoholism, it can really turn them into a completely different person. And unfortunately for my situation, that would be emotionally abusive, sometimes physically, just anger coming out, temper, and really an unstable childhood that left me with a lot of traumatic experiences and a lot of things to process, and then a lack of a father figure that would have been, you know, very crucial for, I think, anyone's health that they actually need growing up. That, on top of some concussions with hockey, a general pattern of partying, growing up in a rural area, struggling with my own sexuality, and realizing that I had interest in the other sex at a young age, and being too scared to talk about that, to tell anyone, because of the fear of persecution, of stigma, of all these different things. And so, you know, at all these things I didn't realize were sort of coming together at the same time, and not just the same time, but just over years of this chronic stress and anxiety, and always monitoring the environment and making sure that, you know, that my dad was okay, and then, you know, the effects of that on my mom, and my mom not becoming the person that she wanted to be or deserved to be, and then having her own temper and anger and insecurities. All this stuff sort of came together, and for me at 21, I basically had just a mental breakdown after my 21st birthday. My hockey career came to an end, and again, anyone who's, you know, knows me knows the story or watched it unfold. But we won this, you know, championship. Instead of feeling happiness, I just felt numb. I felt I lost my purpose. I just didn't know what to do, and that triggered a series of just partying and getting out of control, and not just alcohol and marijuana, but cocaine and really just going down a path that I was not very happy to be going down. It left me feeling very numb, and I realized that at least partway through that summer. So that was about 2013. And that's also when I stumbled into, everyone knows this, psychedelics. That's when I first had my first psilocybin experiences. So in parallel, I was having these, you know, very potent, I guess, partying experiences late into the night, and, you know, all the stuff that goes along with that, and the health and the staying up too late and everything, you know. And then also these psychedelic experiences on the weekend, which all of a sudden just shifted my perspective, this paradigm that I had, this way that I felt about the world and what I thought was real and what was possible and what we took, apologize for that, what we took as real, what we thought was real. All these things started to get mixed up together until my 21st birthday. I had an amazing time. I had a bunch of friends. We ate some psilocybin mushrooms and walked through the city, and really felt like maybe there was a new chapter opening in my life. But 7 days after my birthday, maybe 7 days, my dad had a heart attack, and he lived. He did die. He died in the hospital for a minute, and they brought him back to life. And so it was a really scary time. And all of a sudden, all these revelations sort of started to come up to me. It's come up of just like, I haven't dealt with any of this stuff. I don't have a good relationship with my father. Could have lost him right there. You know, what's going on with his work? He's worked in a factory for so long, and what could have driven him to, like, all these questions started to emerge. And instead of having, you know, wrapping support around me, I isolated myself, and I actually started to use psilocybin much more intensely. And, you know, if anyone knows about, you know, using psychedelics, there's a risk already. And then add stress to that, add trauma growing up, large doses without the right intention, the time between support, guidance, like this is really what's possible. And there's often a lot of people who think that everything seems so stable in the world, and I think this year there was a lot of, with COVID, with everything that came, we started to realize just how unstable how dynamic this world actually is. And I just thought that, you know, many people who are born into some privilege, that you're invincible, that you're just walking on stable ground. And what I realize is that it's much more like you're walking along a cliff, and just a couple steps to either side and you can fall off that cliff really easily. And that led to a series of public breakdowns and videos, and I always loved videos and posting. And so all of this just sort of happened with the eye of people on me after, you know, after this hockey championship, and, you know, lots of big parties with, you know, everyone in the city that I came through, sort of all connected. And that was a really difficult time in my life. And there was a lot of stuff that was made up internally that I still work through and deal with. But basically, as I went through those experiences, I felt a lot of shame. I felt a lot of stigma. And there's a big difference, I like to say, between solitude and then isolation. Solitude can be amazing for you. You can learn about yourself. You can become happy with yourself. But isolation means that you've pushed people away, that you've ignored social connection for too long. And as much as I myself, and I think people like to tell themselves, we need people. We need people. We need social connection. We need family. We need love. We need friends. And so I, over several months, sort of got worse, I guess. And I ended up in the hospital as an inpatient after a suicide attempt, and multiple and many different reasons. Not just the attempts that mattered, it was that this ongoing thought loop was in my mind over and over and over. You don't deserve to be here. You know, find a way to leave this earth. Everything that you've worked for that 21 years, like whatever, like, is gone. Like, why try? Why try to heal? Why try to grow? Why try to even repair the damage that you've done? You've lost everything. That's the, you know, the loop that can take over your mind. And I ended up as an inpatient in the hospital. You know, anyone who's gone through that experience knows that, you know, they're really just trying to bring you out of crisis and then get you to a place that's safe. At least here in Canada, they do as much as they possibly can, but there's shortcomings in the system that we have. And once you are out of that crisis situation, they sort of need you to leave the hospital. And so that's what happened. I spent a week. I told the doctors I was okay. I was not okay. I had every intention to find a way to kill myself after I left the hospital. And the first time I had, I guess, had enough power in my mind, I told my grandma. I woke up one day, I was staying at her place, and God bless her and, you know, the people who do support you in difficult times, and said, if like, grandma, if you don't take me to the hospital right now, I'm going to hurt myself. I don't know what to do. And what a horrible thing to have to tell your grandma, your grandpa, to put them through. She jokes that I aged her, and I did, and it's actually quite sad. Second time I went to the hospital was after a much more serious attempt to take my own life. For a while, I thought I really wanted to kill myself. And as I reflect back now and I think about it, and I sort of, some of the clouds sort of, I guess, dissipate, I realized I wanted to live. There was a moment during the attempt that I realized that I needed to, couldn't do this, basically. And I ended up back in the hospital, months, that's this time, multiple months. And it was, this was a really eye-opening experience. The first time in the hospital was enough, because you saw some really sad people in there, and some people who had actually hurt themselves, and people who had been traumatized by war. And a second time, though, staying in for such a long time was quite impactful in my life. And I guess in a positive way and a negative way, I took 2 months, and I grew through that time. At least I reduced the desire slowly. You know, that thought loop that we can get into, that's every single second Tyler, you don't deserve to be here. You're worthless. Life is meaningless. No point for you continuing this. That went away, and instead of every second, it was once a minute, and then, you know, once every 10 minutes, and then once an hour, and it slowly and slowly started to just give me some time, give me some relief, give me some breath, some air to stop suffering. And so after a few months, I left the hospital, and this time my sort of resolution to myself was, you know, I definitely wasn't healthy. I had a lot more work to do. I wanted out of there. I wanted to get the hell out of there. But it was, if you're going to do it this time, Tyler, no, you're going to take your life. There's no fucking around this time. Just do it. Don't, you know, there's no cries for attention. There's no, you know, like just, it was either in or out at this point. And when you think about it in this way, it's sort of hard to, it's hard to commit to out. So once you're out, you're out. And what I realized is if I even felt this way, that there was a lot of work that I had to do. And so I guess this just paints a little background for you, if you are listening or watching this, of my own experience with mental health, why I'm so passionate about this, why I've worked so hard on this, why I've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars literally personal money, of time donated to organizations, calls, conversation, and like just I just care so much about this. And I think you know, a lot of people who go through difficult times, what they don't want to see other people go through is those difficult times unnecessarily. And I thought that there was a lot of things that I wish I had known, that if I had known, I probably could have avoided some of this pain. Probably could have avoided some of the suffering, and not just myself, but what I caused to other people, the isolation that I did, the stress that I caused my family members and my friends and the people who cared about me. And so that's sort of been my mission ever since. And I had to figure out how to build something sustainable. For a while, at least make money, and I was too scared to go to work. And so some reason I thought that building my own company would be a better idea. And I, you know, I slowly took this path. I decided I wanted to go back to school after this whole ordeal. I needed to learn some more practical skill sets. I went to Fanshawe College in London, Ontario. And then I learned how to build websites. And after my first year, I had a couple of people ask me to build websites, and there was a program called the Summer Company Program, which would give you a $3,000 grant to start a business. And I had an opportunity to go do a job, and it was a job where I would just have to basically, it was Rogers, and I would just have to go and talk and sell stuff by standing outside of it. And that just absolutely terrified me. At this point, I had gained a bunch of weight. Right now I'm about 190 pounds. I was about 280 pounds at my peak. And I had some serious work that I needed to do. And I thought if I could start my own company, this is maybe, you know, it was delusional maybe at the time, that I could have a little bit more control over my life and monitor a little bit better and just figure out, give myself some time to figure out what I needed to do, and then hopefully become able to, capable of, you know, helping in a different way. And one of the realizations I had was it was really hard to, for me at the time anyways, it felt very hard to make an impact when I had no money, I had no respect, no one believed me, no one knew what I was capable of, no one knew that the experiences that I had gone through had made me more, you know, more strong, more resilient. And I wrestled with a lot of insecurity and pain during that time as well too. And so what I like started to want to figure out was just, what could I actually do to make myself feel better. And during this time, I had always written rap lyrics. I'd always wrote songs and music and notes and journaled to myself, whether on paper or on audio notes or video recordings. Like, I found watching myself on video, recording a video, saying how I feel, talking to things, and then watching it back would give me this instantaneous feedback, and then also this ability to analyze yourself immediately. And that real-time feedback, this loop, was very, really powerful for me. And I started to use different tools. I would just record, like right now I'm using OBS for this. I think I would use like OBS. Some of the stuff is still, you know, blurry. I would write text notes, would just write on like journal papers and pads. And I really have always loved, I see what sort of setup here. I loved audio notes, recording audio and then just talking and processing the through the experiences that I actually had. And I just started to work on this idea of like self-reflection and self-analysis and monitoring myself. And anytime I could, trying to capture high quality audio recordings or video recordings so I could then listen back or watch back. So I think that's like one key part of the technology that I'm trying to build. But again, I'm not trying to just leave this as a technology. It's more about a process and a methodology. So it's like record, and I'm writing this down. Now you can hear the camera getting a little louder, or the laptop getting a little louder. So record videos, record audio, and then capture notes, basically. So, and just to show you, hopefully this works. Yes. There we go. So I'm just writing basically what I'm just sort of going through. And like, there's a couple things. This is actually the Speak system that are just sort of, I guess, you know, that are sticking out to me that I can actually show on the screen here. And then I'll also switch back. But one of the things that has actually started to get a lot more research around it has basically been this idea of expressive writing, therapeutic journaling. I guess those are the two terms, but basically if you write about your trauma, if you write about the experiences you're having, the emotions that you feel, then by actually taking those emotions and then articulating them into words has a very powerful therapeutic effect to it. And we're starting to see, you know, there's been several studies on here, and I'll actually now pull up this screen. One of them being by, actually I'll switch out for a sec just so I can pull this wonderful man up and make sure that I get the details right. So there's an awesome guy here. Now I've got it. James Pennebaker. So he wrote the book, The Secret Life of Pronouns, and he did a ton of research over the years of basically the power of expressive writing. Actually, you can see here. So there was actually a specific protocol for this as well too. And basically you would get people to go through and for 15 to 20 minutes a day would actually write those emotional upheavals, positive, negative, and then that process of going through turning them to words became clear that there was a lot of value here. And what one of his studies actually found was there wasn't actually just a link between mental health, but there was also a link to physical health. And I've got a couple of links. I'm still doing a little bit more looking into this because, you know, there's always obviously skepticism that can be involved. But they showed that, yeah, by working through your emotions, that there was mental health benefits, and then there was physical health benefits, and I believe it was blood pressure and body fat percentage, and I should have all this stuff prepared. I know I'm coming back to it, but the idea was and is that turning the emotions you have into words is what's really powerful. And there's a couple of things that I'd like to think about around, you know, all the studies they did a lot of writing. So there's a lot of power that comes with tangibly writing something and going through that exercise. So how connected is the therapeutic effect, both mentally and physically, from the actual writing part, the physical activity of doing that, versus typing, versus recording an audio note? There's a big difference between those. So that's one thing that I'm sort of paying attention to, and I don't want to go, you know, too deep into claims before I make a wrong, say something that's not wrong or not accurate, but there definitely does seem to be something really powerful here. And this is, I guess, bringing me back to the own technology and process and methodology. Write stuff down. Just get it out of your head. That was one of the biggest sort of breakthroughs for me as I went through a really difficult time, was when I kept everything in my head, I felt, for lack of a better term, crazy. I couldn't handle it. There was too much going on in my mind. I know there's a lot of people right now who have swirling, quick-moving minds that are firing at all times. And if you can't harness that and get it out of your head, then you're just going to swim and swim and swim. And so that's one recommendation that I'm making. I'm not just selfishly trying to claim that what I'm working on, what I'm building, is the only way to do this. I have a friend who's going through a really difficult time right now, and she started recording videos and has already felt the therapeutic effect of that. And she just did that with a camera on her phone. You can use Evernote. You can use, and write text notes. You can use your default iOS app notes. There's systems to do this. What really, I think, matters is if you have a thought, whether that's inspiration and it's actually helpful outside of mental health, or if there's a trauma or a pain or something that you're struggling with, how can you actually take that, put it into an environment? In my case, I love digital because there's now a lot of things you can do with it in digital format, and then start to come at it from a different perspective, be able to revisit it, reanalyze. Can you make connections to other moments or things that you're actually doing? And that was one thing I always felt was sort of the lack with keeping it just on paper, is it felt valuable at the time and therapeutic at the time, but as I wanted to go back for review, for analysis, it always was hard to find. I had a lot of notebooks scrolling through, and there just was no scrolling, flipping through the pages. I am so stuck in this world. That was sort of the challenge for me, is how valuable it felt at the time, but then how that sort of fell apart after a while. So, you know, my recommendation is find something digital, find something secure, find something that you trust. That's something that I know I think a lot about, first of all, for myself, and then people are asking us when they're looking at the application that we're building, is this safe? Is this, you know, private? Is it secure? Putting a lot of work into that, first of all, money, time, and energy, research. But like, if you don't feel safe and secure sharing yourself into the system that you're using, then you're not going to get to full healing potential. And I think that's something I've started to think a lot about as well too, is how does knowing you're being recorded, knowing that you are writing this into a system that you didn't build, how is that actually affecting you experiencing the full therapeutic healing? Have you know that maybe, I believe, for example, like Evernote leaked a lot of notes, 4.5 million people got details leaked. If you were writing personal journals and thoughts, and there's struggles with mental health in there, like there's things to think about. And if you don't have faith in the systems you're using, then you're not going to be able to, yes, fully experience or share the way that you want. So that's something that I'm thinking a lot about, and just thinking about how we can, you know, encrypt, not just in rest, but or in transit, but in rest, and make sure that people know that we're not trying to, I don't want to know intimate details of your life. I just want to help. And the system that we're building is doing that. It's not me personally going in and looking through things. It's not that. So, you know, that's not going to be the culture. That's just, that doesn't make any sense. What we want is a system and then a community that crowdsources how we can actually self-monitor, self-analyze for self-improvement, for mental health, for well-being, so we can be more productive, so we can live to our fullest potential. That's what we care about. So I know I haven't necessarily built the trust up fully, but I can swear and I can tell you how much we actually do care about that, because I'm putting my own deepest, darkest personal thoughts, feelings, emotions, everything into this system, and I want to keep that stuff safe as well too. So just to reiterate, one of those things is, if you have thoughts, whether it's inspiration or if you're struggling, document it and try to get it if you can. I know that there is lots of stuff, lots of power in writing, you know, physically, but if you can capture it digitally, there's so much power for analysis. One day I hope that I can actually write on a paper notepad and it will sync directly into speak. I'll let you know as soon as that comes. And so there's a couple other things that I want to show. I've already been going on for 30 minutes, I think. Thank you if you're still here. But one of the things that I'm trying to figure out basically is how do we, in our tech right now, and it will only continue to prove, we're doing, for example, sentiment analysis to understand what moments were negative and positive and sentences throughout your, you know, transcripts from your audio and video, and then actual sentences within your text. We're also doing named entity recognition, so we know if you meant, you know, if you mentioned a person or a location or a brand, or you know, we'll add more objects so that you can actually self-define things that you think are valuable. You know, now that you know, for example, that these things are being analyzed and then surfaced for you, all these items, and you know you have a tool that can combine audio and video and text holistically, how does that modify your experience with the technology, and then how you can actually therapeutically work through what you're trying to process and what you're trying to go through. So now, for example, I can say, when I go to this location, I feel happy. I feel sad. When I talk to this person, it makes me feel inspired, makes me feel excited. When I eat a lot of sugar, I feel depressed. When it's really rainy for a bunch of days in a row, it makes me sad. So by connecting an object and the way that you're feeling, this connection is actually made. And that becomes a very powerful thing, because you can start to input things in the system that are sort of correlating to how you're feeling, to your mood. And then you can then re-examine and re-expose and resurface those down the line. So I just wanted to make that maybe a little bit more tangible. I'll just show you. This is actually, I've now exported audio and video from the time I've started. So like June 6, 2019 until September 10th. And this is every time. You can see what I've done here is actually typed in the word that at times, every time I've said sad, basically. And now I can see spikes in it. And I can then start to see, okay, so why, and I know exactly what happened here. November 21st, 2019, my partner at the time and I ended our relationship, and it was really sad. And I made a note and I said, no, we are no longer together and I'm sad. It's going to be sad for a while. And so I was self-documenting and self-reporting. And at the time, we weren't even that advanced, but I knew that there was things coming down the pipeline that would then expose this in the future. And so by self-documenting, self-referencing, saying why, I'm now able to get this spike, which is a moment of interest to me and something I can go surface. And now I can go back to this audio note. I can re-listen to it. I can find the actual sentences. I can find out what made me feel so sad. So that's like one of the things that I'm trying to think of. And then I just, another part was sort of a same idea, but surfaced through a different way, was I was actually looking at sentences, right? So September 7th, you know, all the way back to December 8th, 2019, and then I typed in the word breakthrough. So now I know I can go, you know, and use any word. Again, a feel or feeling is really powerful, because then if I typed in transcript text here, feel or feeling, then it will surface every sentence that I say that. And then I can start to analyze. I can start to learn about what's making me feel certain ways and call it instantly. In this case, I was looking through the word breakthrough, and then I'm now able to see, you know, May 5th, 10 p.m., a new apartment note. That's a breakthrough, right? And I said, whoa, I don't know what I was talking about here. I could now reference that note, and I can go navigate through it. And, you know, even with new notes, where it's actually starting to grab some metadata for myself, I can see that it was in Toronto and that it was a little bit cloudy. And it's going to take forever to chug through this, I think, but just to show you another example. If I self-reference and I say happy, then I'm going to be able to see that same spike here. Again, this takes too long. This is not in the actual Speak system yet. This is actually a raw export, and then I'm using a Google Data Studio to then expose the info. But we're now surfacing, we're adding tags and then transcript text, which will actually be sentiment analysis, sentiment text, so that you will be able to search through audio, video, and text. And for example, what I've done here is every time I've said happy. Hopefully, I'm not exposing anything that's too upsetting for you, but you can see literally every instance that I said I'm happy. I'm very happy that I used to use the app for this. Just sitting here talking about it makes me really happy. First call. So this is Shahed and I. We did a phone call and we tested this together. And then, you know, all the mentions of happy. So I can now start to see that spike. And I can see the same thing here. When's all the times that I mentioned that I was happy? And so this is the part that I find at least to be like quite a breakthrough in terms of what's possible with technology to self monitor, self document, to analyze, to understand, to help yourself grow. More than that, there's, you know, ways to tag things, and I'm trying to see if I can do this in a way that's, again, not you know, too risky in terms of data. Still is, always is, but this was me preparing for a live stream. And then I, you know, what's happening here is I now sort of am surfacing insights, things that I didn't necessarily know were there. You know, like I get this now, I get an email back when I upload this audio. I recorded for 5 or 8 minutes, sort of went stream of consciousness and talked and talked and talked. And then I get this data back of like, what was I actually talking about? Who did I mention? What brands? What locations? I can start to see the actual connection there. I can start to see sentiment as well too. So I can see, okay, where were the positive moments? Where were the negative moments? Yeah. So like, let's see. Hopefully it stays on the screen, because sometimes get long. Yeah. Childhood trauma and sexual abuse. So you can start to see and quickly analyze and understand. So this has been another big part, is to just like stream of consciousness talk, and then automatically surface things that I wasn't maybe even aware of or paying attention to at the time. And we won't just have, you know, negative, positive, neutral. We'll be able to at least take a shot at telling you what emotions we think that are being described. And then I can even sort through. I can see, okay, what were the top 10 most negative? I can go more than that, but top 10. So if there's 100 sentences in this, what were the most ne negative moments? And then what were the most positive? So that part already has been immensely informative for me to identify things that, again, are positive or negative very quickly. Not, you know, it would be hard for me to go do every single piece of audio, listen to it back. But by transcribing it, by then extracting these insights and then surfacing it in these different forms, all of a sudden you can really quickly get these insights. And then same thing with the actual transcript. You know, everything is searchable. What I've been doing, and if anyone is using the system or wants to use the system or just wants to start self-monitoring or analyzing more in general, one of the things that I would really recommend is to find those words that matter to you, the phrases that matter to you. Lost my mouse. Should come here at some point. There we are. So this has become a sort of an ongoing search for myself. What words are meaningful to me? And I, you know, I've given this example before, but absolutist terms is when you no longer see in a state of, you know, temporary world that your pain is only temporary, but everything becomes permanent. The world is cold. I'm a loser forever. I'm a complete idiot. I will always be that way. Those are the signs that you're actually moving into a state of permanence instead of temporary, and that you might be getting caught in a thought loop. And so if I use those words, I can now start to see how many times I'm using those words. Where do they actually seem to surface? Is it in conversations? Is it with notes to myself? One that emerged for me the other day, someone actually told me, is they look for could or should. When they use those words, it's sort of a why? Is it a distortion? Is it a cognitive distortion? You know, what are those things that are valuable to you? And for myself, now that I've gone through a journey of mental health and really, again, this sort of serious breakdown, I wish I had had a tool like this because I could sort of trace back. I can now trace back and see the signs, but I didn't see them at the time. And now a system like this, a lot of times when I record, especially audio notes, it's when I'm more pushed into a time of stress. And so by doing that, it then surfaces these things and almost these early warnings. So I'm trying to think of it, you know, there's a very high level of that of, I'm feeling depressed. I don't want to be here anymore. Things like that. Those are very obvious signs, but are there more subtle signs for yourself as well too? So those are the things that I recommend is if you're building a process of journaling and writing, start to look for phrases or keywords that actually indicate to you that maybe you're positiving or trending in a positive direction or, you know, sadly in a negative direction. And then you can use that as an early warning signal, as a detection sign, and then correct from there, course correct. There's another thing that I guess, you know, I would like to add there is like what we need to think about are then what are the factors that are actually impacting our mood? And, you know, there's, I wish I had the article pulled up right now, but you know, there's a lot of articles that sort of say like nine, you know, there's nine factors. Some of those are social, you know, your relationships with other people. So how can you self-document that through technology? Some of it's genetic, maybe a little bit more harder to control. But then there's things like your food, your diet, your exercise, to me, one of the big ones is your self-talk with yourself. It's great when you can be happy with other people who are undistracted by a funny television show or whatever it is you're watching. But how do you feel when you're just by yourself, when you're alone, when you're silent? What is that conversation that you're having with yourself, the communication that you're having with yourself? And really, that's what I'm trying to capture sometimes. It's not me. I almost remove myself and record. I pull back and then I expose that underlying stream of consciousness that can be positive or negative, trying to capture that and then go and reflect on that after, review what was just said and sort of removing myself from that picture. So if you can do that, that's why this expressive writing, a therapeutic journaling, I say, like, don't stop writing. Just write and write and write and write until you're done your 15 minutes, your 20 minutes, and then go back and look at what just came out. When you tap into that stream of consciousness, you're revealing something about yourself, about the way that you feel, your perspective on the world, and to have a tool and to have systems to then go and re-examine that is, deeply, deeply powerful. So one of the things that it's not quite polished and fleshed out the way that I would like it to be, but is the documentation of, I think, two major ones are exercise and then your diet. So a lot of us are using disparate apps connected. I don't know, I use FitnessPal and that monitoring and regulating what I was eating, and then understanding my exercise was huge for me to lose the weight from 280 down to what I am now. And so how can I do that with our system that we're building? It's also something that I'm trying to figure out, and then trying to make that as seamless as possible, because the part that always sucks with my FitnessPal or any of those tools is manually documenting them, and then you lose the desire to do it sometimes. And again, it always seems to be, sometimes it's easy to do it when it's good, but then a lot of people, I think, find that it's easy to do these things when you're really sad or you need to, you're forced to. Then once you sort of get out of that crisis moment, that then those habits go away, you stop the tracking. And I know that happens with me all the time. And so what I'm trying to figure out a way to do is reduce the friction of things. And so I would like to be able to just record with my voice, audio note, text note, yeah, but I want hands-free, selfish, is how could I document what I'm eating and then have that ported in for analysis as well too, or at least, at the very least, for recall. So that's something that I'm trying to think. Let's see if I can actually do. Hope I actually have an example of this. I've never actually typed this one in before. But for example, like what, I'm typing in sugar, by the way. Yes. There we go. Oh, so cool. See, I have not done this before. Sugar. Yeah. And love you, sugar inside. I'm not sure what I was saying there. Sugar. I felt the effects of sugar, right? So now this easy search method surfaces things. I don't know if I have more. I'm sure I've talked about food. Self-documenting my food, yeah, the intake of unhealthy food and drinking. Lots of cake and food this weekend, and that's never healthy. Yeah, see, I hadn't actually surfaced this before. Yeah. Very, very fascinating. So I'm tagging food. And then here's another one that definitely, you know, is important. So I've got food, I want exercise. I did, you know, I should just be able to say, you know, I did 3 sets of 25 reps of dumbbells, bicep curls. You know, that was horrible. I just butchered that whole thing. But, you know, that's the idea that I actually want to get into. And then, you know, the other one that I sort of just mentioned. So for me, I'm a fancy man, so I use the word psilocybin. But if I am looking at, you know, any psychedelics or microdosing or macrodosing, look, you can see now 0.9 psilocybin, 0.9. So I did 0.9, maybe 1.5 throughout the day. Guelph is actually in Toronto, but 9 p.m., few clouds, 1.5 on September 12th. Yeah, quite a bit. I agree. It goes back all the way, wow, 2019. There we go. Why I'm using psilocybin. So like now I'd be able to, with just a simple word written or spoken, I'm able to then pull up instances of drug use. It could be prescription medicine. It could be non-prescription medicine. But the power to be able to document that and then pull it up at any moment to then chart it out over time. So if I say, again, psilocybin, I can now see spikes in that and connect to see if there's anything else. Wow. So here's the instances that I actually mentioned it. One of the other things I thought was fascinating too, now I'm skipping, but it was sentiment over time. So this was sentiment of overall note sentiment. So I can start to see positivity and negativity over time, where that actually was, and that's all the way from June. So by documenting on an ongoing basis, putting into this system, and then combined with the analysis that we actually built in, all of a sudden I'm sort of, just surfacing these things I didn't even know. I'm so honestly grateful for it, because I put a lot of time and investment into documenting these things, not mentioned building the system, and to now see it giving me insights, and not only insights, but breakthroughs. I'm truly humbled. I'm grateful, and it seems like we're on a path. path to help people. And that's, again, why I'm here and what I'm doing. I have a rule. Okay. It's not a rule. It's a thing to live by, but 11 cents. Let's see. Hello. Hello. And the idea is that a stick of incense isn't a great measurement of time. And so I can now know that my incense is almost done. So that means that maybe my time with this video is almost done. I'm trying to think if there's anything else, because I know I got through some good stuff, but I also feel like I didn't do a lot of things I want to talk about. But I think this will not only be, this will be just part one. I will do much more. You're at 50 minutes, Tyler. So the question, re-ask yourself, that would be a good thing. How do I use speak to improve my mental health? We've talked about the documenting, just getting things out of your head, recording and capturing. Talked about like the self-referential part. So just like knowing the named entity recognition, the sentiment analysis, knowing that that's there, then you can use that to your advantage when you're actually recording notes, so then you can surface insights that you're looking for. And then by, for example, attaching, I feel, I see, when I go to this location, I feel happy, that it then allows you to build that connection between sentiment and an entity. One of the things, I guess, is, you know, I'm looking at the way that this is helping me right now, but I'm always anticipating what's coming in the future as well, too. And there's some really exciting things. And one of them is, like, we keep calling it deep search, but it's basically, you know, we want people, I'm looking for, you know, very, I love the data stuff. I love it. Like, I'm looking for instances of sad. Da, 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 da. But what people are not, you know, you don't want to manually type sad, because what about when you were use the word depressed or devastated? Like, there, we need to not just individually use words. We need to start to categorize and group them together to focus more on the emotional weight or what you're actually trying to surface for. The other part that I'm really exploring right now, and I think is deeply, deeply fascinating, is getting to what, again, what people are actually looking for. So, you know, I mentioned my friend who was struggling a little bit. She said she wasn't just data-driven stuff is great, but what she wants to know is, why am I sad today? And that's something I really want to figure out. That's what plags me sometimes. I just wake up, I'm just not happy. And I want to figure out why. What is it? Is it the sugar intake? Is it that there has been multiple days of bad weather? That I spent too much time with someone that makes me feel a little sad and negative? That I'm too stressed out? That I re-triggered some trauma? Or I'm not trusting someone, I'm not loving someone the way I am? These are the things that I'm trying to spend a lot of time on, because if you can get early warning signs, signals, you can correct. If you, again, just wake up and you feel miserable and horrible, or if you feel great, you know, you want to know why. How can you replicate that over and over and over again? And then can you predict? So if I know, for example, that when there's 5 days of cold, sad rain, that I get, you know, 40% more depressed in my notes. If I could look into the weather forecast and then say, hey, Tyler, you've got some really tough days coming up here in terms of weather. I just wanted you to mentally prepare. So, you know, these are the contextual information, you know, sort of points that we're really trying to figure out. And then just, again, not displaying just data, but actually displaying insights. And just to make this point, you know, this is a little too busy, right? These are all the sort of the topics that I've mentioned. And if I go into, you know, I guess I should turn this off for a second, but, you know, turn, you know, if I start to go, this is already, so this is only 10 days. Let me switch here for a sec. See if I can get this. Yeah, I'll go back even less, say the last couple days. And then these are sort of the insights that I'm actually surfacing. I apologize for the right corner. So psilocybin damage, just talking about brain damage. This part's really cool, by the way. I want to know, I was talking about brain damage, then I can actually go click and go to that specific moment. So still blows my mind. Blows my mind that you can actually do this. But I can use this to surface sort of my own analysis. And like, wow, I've talked about this. I didn't even realize I was talking about this. And how many times, like I said, feel 42 times in the last 6 days. Now I can start to sort of get some ideas to sort of navigate through, or things that I maybe need to address. But it's still busy. It's a lot of analysis. And what I'm trying to figure out, and what we're trying to figure out, is how can we actually break this down to sentences? Like, how can we turn this to, again, not just analytics, but insights, and then actually breakthroughs? How can I get, how you're maybe feeling right now, and then predictions, and then, sentence. We know, this week you're, 25% more positive than last week. And then this idea for the search bar up here is, why am I feeling unhappy today? Why am I feeling so good today? And we can't just give the answers, but we can give suggestions. We can give things that we might think. And say you have a person named, James, who you don't like. And I said, I don't like James. When I talk to James, it makes me really unhappy. And then a couple weeks later, you start to feel really sad. And you say, I don't know why I feel sad today. And so you ask. And it says, well, have you been talking to James? And you either realize you were. And you're, holy shit, yes, I mentioned that. And I didn't even realize, or maybe that we were wrong. And no, I wasn't talking to James. So that wasn't the solution. But then maybe you've ruled something out. So those are, a couple of things. The actual thinking about is not just obviously now. Now is... just a thing. The future is coming, and we're always working towards it, and we've got some awesome things happening for us right now that are going to allow us to continue exploring this and growing. But those are the things we're trying to figure out. And just, as a note, this came to me, and I've gone on longer, of course, but just like we've built a system to import, like bulk import Evernote notes. So now if you've been recording Evernote notes over the last, so I've been doing it for, 17,000 notes over like almost a decade. And what data could I get from that? What insights could I get myself from that? I was journaling and writing and recording in that all the time, not recording audio, but they didn't have very good audio and video. It's part of the reason why I built this system. But like, I was recording notes, and there's valuable insights there, not just what I wrote, how I wrote it, when I wrote it, where I wrote it. And you could even go back in time to start to surface these things and connect dots. Sometimes I ask myself if all this is helping me, but I undoubtedly actually feel like it has, even if it's just convincing myself. I'm trying to make more quantitative, get a better quantitative understanding of myself. That's been really helpful, and it's been a fun journey at the very least. I think that I can continue to do this. And what I'm trying to do is not just surface things that I think are valuable, but things that are clinically validated. What's tough here is I haven't been tracking my mood in an objective way throughout this entire period. So if I took, for example, PHQ-9 questionnaires, and then correlated with everything else, I'd start to be able to make a lot more connections between what I was writing and then the actual objective measure of my mental health. So I'm starting to think a lot more about that. How can I objectively measure so then I have something to compare this data to? Do I think the answer for all of this is technology? Not really. Not all the time. In fact, I think many of us feel that we need to get more connected with nature, with ourselves, with our family, with our friends, with our loved ones. And I look at what we're building as something that can help augment that and be part of it, but not something that is everything. Because as much as I love what I'm building, the system that we're building, I spend a lot of time in it, it's very helpful for me. There's more to life than just looking at the data. It's, getting these insights and integrating them into your life and then going to live a better life, learning a little bit more, self-reporting and documenting again, and then going back out and living again. And that's what I'm thinking about a lot right now too. It's been hard to admit to myself and others that a lot of this is for my own mental health to build this and do this. And that there's a worth, it's worth focusing on mental health. You know, people keep telling me, oh, what's the business case for this? What's the blah, blah, blah. How are you going to fund this? Of course, those things are important, but you can change people's lives, give them tools they need to help themselves grow and self-heal, and they're going to be better. They're going to be better personally, professionally. It's going to make compounding impact effects on their entire life. I've said this before, but like this note worth idea of when you document your notes and you self-document like this, it compounds over time just like an investment. And I'm really trying to make this connection between mental health and then what's I guess the business case of this. And it sucks to have to do this. And I don't want to really. Like, I just want to see people have the tools they need to avoid the suffering, to see, get those early warning signs, to get those signals. Your health is everything. If you're not healthy, you can't do the other things. And so I'll keep fighting this case. I'm going to keep pushing this, showing how crucial our own mental health is, trying to help people quantify it, to get a therapeutic release, to build more empathetic technology that actually seems to care about them, care about you. Like, I want this technology to care about me, and already some of the insights it's given me, it means a lot. I couldn't do this just by myself, and that's what makes me so excited. I'm not building this out of, some maybe I'm saying this, but I'm trying not to build this out of ego. I just want to find people who care about this too, who see the possibilities here and want to contribute and want to help, want to grow personally themselves. They want to help other people grow. They want to stop other people from suffering, that we can build, again, not just technology, but content and resources and guides and methodologies, how to improve, to feel better, to self-monitor, to become more self-aware, to become more productive. These things that really make us happy. How can we stay into flow state? How can we get and stay into flow state? Something else I'm trying to just deeply dive into and see if there's ways to do that with technology. I'll add again that it's not everything. Not perfectly here. I'm not capable of building all of this. You need to talk. You know, if you're struggling, you need to talk to people. You need talk therapy. You need to reach out to your friends and the people that love you. You need to eat healthy. You need to exercise right. You need to do all these other things. Is there any other thing that you want to talk about, Tyler? How do you speak to self-monitor and improve your mental health? For me, I think it's a confidence that I have that I can do this and just retrieve it at any site, at any second. And that I know if I was a user, to have faith in a company that cares is continuing trying to push to expose new insights to yourself. So that's what makes me happy. I'm confident in the direction we're going, that we have purpose and meaning. And we got through a lot. I'm pretty happy with that. I hope this was enlightening, enjoyable. There's some connections maybe made. And I'll be back to talk about this more. If you have any ideas, any thoughts, you want to just chat, connect about this stuff. How can we use technology for good to improve ourselves, to improve our understanding of ourselves, others, our own awareness, our own mental health, our well-being? Please feel encouraged to connect. And thank you to everyone who supported me along this journey. It really, truly does mean a lot. I love you very much. And just thank you for spending this time with me here today. I think there's a lot more amazing stuff that can come from hope for us and hope for you. And I just wish you all the best on your journey. Thank you.